This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on your official home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get back to it. Sportsnet Today is back on the air on this Thursday, November 24th, coming at you live from Adrenaline Source for Sports, 9309 McLeod Trail Southwest. Our friends at Adrenaline, always kind enough to have us out here. Glad to be back with the gang here. Azam's hanging out. You got Leon from sales. American Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our American listeners. That means Black Friday's coming up tomorrow. We got some great deals to tell you about. If you've noticed, the renovations, if you drove by here for a few times, are over. The place looks fantastic. We'll tell you more about what we're doing here at Adrenaline throughout the afternoon. You got 2 hours of Sportsnet today this afternoon. We got lots to get to. Flames fall to the Penguins last night in a shootout. NFL football is underway with a triple header of games this afternoon. And we'll talk with Peter Labardius. We'll break down last night's game. Thursdays, mean a chat with Adnan Virk from MLB NHL Network, plus an edition of Ask Andy on a Thursday. I was off on the mornings the last couple of days with the boys on the big show, so didn't have a chance to do some of our regular stuff on the weekend, but appreciate you guys being here, and we'll go through some of those segments this afternoon. But the main segment that I've missed doing is the one that I do every single day to kick off the program. It's going down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcoming in our friend for the Gemini Group and Gemini Group Home Renovations, Peter Labardius. Lou, how are you this afternoon?
I am good, sir. I am good.
Good to hear. Flames and Penguins last night. Game 4 of 6 on this road trip for the Calgary Flames ends in pretty fitting fashion if you're a Penguins fan last night after a wonderful pregame ceremony honoring the 1,000 games of Evgeny Malkin. He scores the eventual shootout winner last night to give the Penguins the victory. I guess just your thoughts and observations from last night's loss for the Flames.
Well, you're right about how it ended for the Penguins and their fans, and you know, a storybook type ending after, and it was a great ceremony, and I thought the tribute to Malkin was incredibly tasteful and incredibly well done. You know, you have to start last night, obviously, terrific goaltending performance by Dan Vladar, who was magnificent. I thought he was the best player in the game, period, for either side, and played a massive role in the Flames' ability to end up engineering even 1 point. As far as everything else was concerned, outside of him, I really, really liked the Flames for about 14 minutes in the second period. I thought they got to their offensive forecheck. I thought they created chances and were a much more difficult team to deal with for the Penguins, but you know, I'd have to give the edge certainly in the first and third to Sidney Crosby and company. And it's a good thing the Flames had an excellent goaltending performance last night, or they probably come away with zero instead of continuing to build. And it's something that you need from your goalies every once in a while. So they now have points in 3 in a row. And I guess I'd end my observation to begin, Logan, this way. The road trip to, you know, the two New York stops and Boston, I could make an argument that they might have played equally as well, if not better, and had very little in the result category for 3 games. They had 1 point, and in the last 3 of this trip, they have 5 of a possible 6.
Yeah, that's a big thing for the Calgary Flames to come out of these games, not only with some wins, but to rack up some points. They've had some tough opponents here, and the Penguins certainly presented a unique challenge last night. Let's talk about the number one star for the Calgary Flames last night, Lou. It was pretty clear that number 80 was dialed in for the Calgary Flames, and I think that's, you know, sort of last night is the antithesis of what you're hoping Dan Vladar can be for this team. Give your team every chance to win. I don't know what else to say about the performance last night, from the shootout to overtime, going back to that first period that you mentioned. It could have been way worse for the Calgary Flames if number 80 wasn't as strong as he was last night.
Well, there isn't really much left on the bone where he's concerned. 37 of 38. You know, many of the terrific variety in terms of the quality of chances he had to deal with. Probably 6 or 7, 10 bellers for sure, if not more. So it's what you hope for. He hadn't played in a couple of weeks, and he's now had back-to-back really, really quality starts. And, you know, it's not easy to be that player, and he more than delivered on his end of the bargain last night.
I would think I know the answer, Lou, but pretty safe to say that you'll see him in one of these next two back-to-back games for the Flames?
Yeah, I would think so. I would be shocked if we didn't, based on performance and schedule. And Logan, this is the part of those trips for people who have never been on them, that it does start to get really taxing. You know, they've been away now for a while. They've played four. They have two very difficult stops left in Washington, and we'll close it out Saturday afternoon in Carolina against a Hurricanes team where you always have to be at your best to come away with anything. There's little doubt about that. So I'm sure he will get one more game. I'm not exactly certain as to which one it would be. I don't really think it matters. You're going to need, you know, a really good goaltending performance in both of those games to come away with some points.
I think a lot of people, Lou, that I saw last night from that I saw on social media last night when talking about the Flames were a bit frustrated with this group's offensive inconsistency of late. Going back to game one of this road trip, the Flames are only able to put one on the board against Andre Vasilevskiy and the Tampa Bay Lightning. They score 5 in a shootout against Florida on the Saturday, 5 against Philly on Monday, and then last night have trouble generating any high-quality chances against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you see this group as one that's trying to find its consistency on the offensive side of things? Is that something that's caught your eye as well?
Well, it's the first place people always go, right? And yes, the answer is yes, but the reasons as to why might be a little different. And yes, the forwards have a big part to play in that, but your board play in your own zone, your ability to make good plays coming out of your own zone. Logan, for one period last night, they got to their game. You know, Ryan Huska puts it this way, and it's one of the great quotes that he's had, is what people don't always get is your checking game usually starts in the offensive zone, and your offensive game usually starts in your own. Mm-hmm. If I was frustrated with any area of the Flames last night, and I have been at times all season long, is sometimes they're just their inability to make plays and be connected as a group of five. You know, last night at times it was hard to make a 2 or 3 foot pass, you know, off at people's sticks, or forwards aren't ready to receive them. You know, and Pittsburgh's a good team, and they played with great structure and great pace, and I thought they did an excellent job hounding pucks when they didn't have them, which was really a trademark of what they were able to do when they won 2 Stanley Cups in 2017 and 2018. So I know that there's always a lot of attention on this group where the forwards are concerned, but I still really go back to two things. I think board play for this team needs to be better, led by their wingers, and I think they need to pass the puck better.
Yeah, I think a key example last night was on the lone goal. The Flames were able to score, Lou. That's, to me, a pretty key example of what this group is looking to achieve when they get into the offensive zone. Play as a connected group. Spend time being hard on the forecheck. Make those, you know, mistakes happen on the other side of things, and good things happen. To me, that was, you know, every good thing that the Flames can and want to do offensively on Dylan Dubé's goal kind of encapsulated in one good long shift, but there just hasn't been enough of those consistently throughout any 60-minute game the last little while to make you feel confident about the group right now.
Yeah, I think that's a little overstretched. Just a little, not a lot. Because here's what I would just add to that, Logan.
Sure.
When you play against really good opponents, you're not going to have those kind of periods and long stretches over 60 minutes. You're just not going to. But where they need to get to and where the consistency part comes is there's been too many long stretches at times without that ability and without when this team's offensive zone forecheck is good and they make good plays coming out of their own zone, which allows them, you know, to put pucks in good places. You know, I call it one and duns. One and duns are not good. Mm-hmm. And one and duns are not good for the Calgary Flames because even some of their best finishers don't necessarily score easy. So I said last night, I don't know what exactly the final numbers were. I know that the Flames really shrunk the gap, but I said last night on our pregame show, Logan, I thought the most important stat of the night, and I feel this way a lot of nights, is do you spend at least as much time in your opponent's zone with the puck as they spend in yours? And that didn't happen last night. It happened in one period. In two of the three, not enough.
We're chatting with our Flames insider, Peter Labardius, here on Sportsnet today. Joins us every single day to kick off the program. It's brought to you by our friends at the Gemini Group and the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Two games left to go on this road trip for the Calgary Flames, Lou, including a 12 noon start tomorrow afternoon against the Washington Capitals. A little Black Friday action. All NHL teams off today for American Thanksgiving, but we're back at it tomorrow in the U.S. Capitol against Washington as the Flames look to finish this out. You mentioned not only two interesting opponents to finish this off for the Flames, but two timed starts, too, that the Flames won't be used to. A lot of us won't be used to catching this team at noon, given, you know, any time of start, but let alone a Friday at noon against the Washington Capitals.
No, I think the Flames only have one start of that time all season long in the Eastern time zone. And, of course, they've been out there now long enough that, you know, their body clocks have obviously adjusted to being on the Eastern time zone, not in the Mountain time zone that they're normally accustomed to. So, you know what? It will be different, Logan. I don't think a lot of players mind it. I think it's something that you have to get somewhat used to, you know, depending on a creature of habit. Some guys just won't like it because their body clocks aren't necessarily ramped and ready to go that early. But,
yeah,
you know, they have no choice. And that's what you find out east. You find, you know, Boston is notorious for playing a lot of, you know, Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock starts. Something you have to deal with. And, yeah, that'll play a role for sure tomorrow. But you have no choice. So you better get up and get into your routine and get to the rink and get ready for an early start.
What do you make of this Washington team when you look at them, Lou? Led by Peter Laviolette behind the bench, one of the great coaches to ever do it. Darcy Kemper is the number one goaltender there now after winning a Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche last year. But you look at the standings and 21 games in for Washington, just 19 points, and currently sitting seventh in the Metropolitan Division with a 3-6-1 record in their last 10.
Well, they're a team that has gone through you know, a great stretch of time in the sport in regards to how consistent they've been. You know, they've been an elite team for many of the last how many years, maybe not the last couple in particular, but prior to that, certainly they won the, you know, Stanley Cup going back to, you know, the years start to get away from me a little bit, but I think 2019 officially was the year they won the Stanley Cup. But they're, you know, they're not young in the tooth anymore. They've had lots of injury trouble again this year to some key people, a ton. So, you know, I always start there, Logan, because, you know, it was a great clip that John Tortorella had the other day about his team, which banged up beyond belief in Philadelphia. How do you evaluate anybody properly when, you know, you're missing four and five really key people at a time? You can't. You can't. And Washington would be one of those teams that I can't really get a grasp on, because I don't think the Washington Capitals can, because they haven't been healthy enough. But, you know, when they're at their best, I know what you're getting. You know, they're going to play big. They're going to play heavy. They're going to be hard to deal with in your zone. I always think, now against Washington, there's probably more of an opportunity to, you know, try and do what they do to you, to them, to be successful. But that's kind of the case. I mean, it's been the whole conversation we've had about when the Flames play connected and they get to their forecheck and they're hard on pucks and they're turning people over and they're getting to the net, you know. Going back, just as I think about it now, one thing I've noticed about the Flames when you talk about some of the inconsistency is I would call it, you know, again, what they have last night, 33, 34 shots when it was all said and done. And the Penguins had 37, which is, you know, 10 more shots given up than they would give up. But again, Logan, it's quality and purpose. And if there's one thing that they haven't done as much, and it usually comes because when you spend time in people's zone and you're not into one and dones, you get more quality opportunities too. Because, you know, look at how hard Pittsburgh made the game for the Flames last night in their own zone. That's what creates turnovers. Turnovers lead to better chances.
Just for any listeners curious about the list of injuries for the Washington Capitals, currently sitting three on injured reserve, three on LTIR. The three on IR are Wilson, Orlov, and former Calgary Hitman Beck Malenstein. The long-term injured reserve list, excuse me, Nick Backstrom, who is as important to any, you know, number one center spot as anybody around the league. Lou, we've talked about him before. Connor Brown and Carl Hagelin. You're just not going to not going to stay above water with those kind of guys missing. I mean, let's be honest. Wilson and Backstrom are two top six players on that team and change the dynamic incredibly just with those two out. Then you take the depth pieces below them out, and it's even harder.
It's harder, and I look at it this way when you run down that list, and thank you for running down that list because it's an important list to get to. So number one center –
yep.
Number one power forward.
Yep.
And one of your top two defensemen. That's some big places to be hampered by injury and long-term injury. You just, nobody, how many times have I said to you about injuries? Nobody really in the cap era has that kind of depth.
No.
You can do it for a little while, but not over a long while.
No, absolutely not. And of interest, one of the guys that they have used in Washington to help make up some of that depth at the NHL level is a guy that we saw in training camp, Lou. Sonny Milano is with the Washington Capitals now. He signed a one-year contract with them and is expected to play tomorrow against the Flames. And that's the kind of moves you have to make when you're down the kind of NHL depth that the Washington Capitals are. So we'll be interested to see how Peter Laviolette runs out his group tomorrow afternoon. Noon start on Black Friday. We'll have all the action for you on Sportsnet 960. Lou and Steinberg with Flames warm-up at 11 a.m. Puck drop with Derek and Lou at 12 right here on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960. With that game tomorrow, Lou, means we have to get to what does Lou say before we go. But before we get to that, some really heartbreaking news in the NHL world today, and a name that a lot of people got reintroduced to over the last couple of weeks, and that's that legendary Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman Boreas Salming died at the age of 71 today. He's been battling ALS since August. He traveled to Toronto earlier this month during Hall of Fame weekend. Despite his illness, they honored him with a great ceremony, the video tribute before the game. They started the all-Swedish lineup. Salming was one of those guys, Lou, that paved the way for a lot of Europeans to play in the NHL back in the 70s, and he was a star for many years with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
You know, I remember him vividly. I remember him coming over. I remember him in the 1976 Canada Cup for the Swedes. I can still, when I think about him and his name, I can still see how he would have his skates done up with the flaps kind of hanging out front from both of them. He played with such passion. He was hard to play against. He was tough. He was skilled. He skated very well. But he was, you know, the term pioneer gets used quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But he was. He came over at a time where, you know, and we used to hear it a lot about, well, maybe some of the Europeans or the Swedes in particular are skilled, but they're not tough enough.
Yeah.
Well, this guy was more than skilled, and he was more than tough enough. And I have to say, I'm so happy for him and his family that he had the opportunity to be paid tribute to, and that timing, as it turns out, and obviously planned in part, was spectacular. And I must say, on a local front, though, all it makes me think about is the Snow family and their everyday battle for Chris and Kelsey and those kids, and that, you know, that horrific, debilitating disease of ALS. And it makes you really sad. And, you know, I really hope at some point, and I know that, you know, thanks to those people and other people, there's lots and lots of stuff being done to try and find a cure or even extend life expectancy. But man, it's a horrible thing.
Yeah, it sure is. And that was just to echo what you said to me. That was the one thing I thought about today was, man, am I ever happy? It's always sad to lose somebody. That's as basic as it gets in human life. But was I ever happy that he got to have that moment, and his family will forever have that moment in Toronto for him to, you know, really feel that appreciation one more time from the fan base and from around the hockey world. And, you know, it was just back in August when he was diagnosed, and we lose one of the greats of the game, one of the true pioneers for European players. He was the first Swedish player ever inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, I believe, Lou.
Yes.
I think that's absolutely.
So yeah. that says everything. And, you know, Logan, you know, on still kind of a bit of a heavier note.
Yeah.
Is how do we celebrate people properly before their time comes to an end?
Yeah.
Because usually it happens
after,
when they leave us.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that's what stuck with me too, was, man, to have that opportunity was, it was already special watching it, and you knew it was special, but now it hits home a little bit more, and I can only imagine how appreciative his family is is to have that moment. So once again, our thoughts are with the Salming family today as Boreas Salming passes away at the age of 71. One more piece of business to get done before I let you go today, sir. With that early Flames game tomorrow, we're moving What Does Lou Say up to today. And, of course, it's brought to you by our good friends at Roost Chris Steakhouse, the best place for game day. Order from the primetime menu and make it in time for puck drop with two courses from $55 and three from $65. Visit roostchrissteakhouse.ca. And I think this was a timely question for us today, Lou. Given that Dennis Gilbert didn't play a lot in last night's game against the Pittsburgh Penguins, our question today comes from Mike, and here it is for you, Lou. Mike asks, Lou, with what does Connor Mackey need to do to get back into Darryl's good books? Seems like he's been leapfrogged by both Gilbert and DeSimone, which is something I would not have predicted at the start of the year.
Well, it's not an easy question to answer, Mike, but it's a great one. And the one thing about being a young player and being in a third-pairing role is you have to get your game to what I would call a trustworthy place. And Connor has a lot of ability and attributes. He's an excellent skater. He's got great size. He plays with some bite. But what has to happen, and when he is at his best, for me, he's doing two things. He's being assertive and he's being simple. And that is taking pucks, moving them quickly, using his skating ability to get up on people and close gaps, being a good partner, making yourself available for outlets. And the reason he's been surpassed, unfortunately, and I love him, he's just a dynamite kid to deal with and talk to. And we've had a couple of good visits this year, Connor and I have, but it's giving the coaching staff 10, 12, 13 minutes where they feel like they can play you, and that when they do, they know what they're going to get. And in Connor's games this year, it hasn't really gone that way.
That is another edition of What Does Lou Say? Mike, congratulations. You've won a $200 gift card to Roost Chris Steakhouse, plus a pair of lower bowl tickets to the Flames and the Habs coming up on Thursday, December 1st. Not bad, eh, Lou?
No, that's, first of all, the dinner and the service and the food is already beyond belief. But you throw in a couple of lower bowl when Montreal comes, yeah, that's a double win, that one right there.
And by the way, we do this literally every week here on Sportsnet Today. All you got to do, head to sportsnet.ca/960, go to the contest tab, enter a question for Lou, and if we answer your question, usually on a Friday, you're entered to win, and you'll win that $200 gift card and a pair of lower bowl seats. We do it literally every single week here on Sportsnet Today, one of the best prizes, and it's brought to you by our good friends at Roost Chris Steakhouse. Lou, enjoy the rest of your evening. I think you've got some football to watch with your Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, yeah. Boy, it was sure fun last Sunday.
Yeah, they weren't exactly dancing on the plane after that one, were they?
No, then, see, maybe you want to keep those, you know what I said, right? Do something before you start dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, guess what? That game wasn't the Super Bowl, and then you got your teeth kicked in at home. So hopefully they're a little better than they were against Dallas.
Yes, sounds good. Lou, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, sir, and enjoy the game tomorrow. Looking forward to your call with Derek and the Flames and the Caps.
Thanks, Logan.
Take care. Peter Labardius, our Flames insider. He's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. We are live from Adrenaline Source for Sports this afternoon. 9309 McLeod Trail South ahead of their great Black Friday deals that are starting tomorrow. We'll tell you about all of those throughout the afternoon. But we'll take a break and come back on the other side. Let's dive into our regular Thursday chat with Adnan Virk. He's coming up next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on the home of the Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Yeah, Sportsnet Today back for segment two, hour one on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in. It's Logan Gordon along with you. Quick reminder, the fan feedback line is always open to you at 960-960. No games in the NHL today, but we can chat some Calgary Flames from yesterday. They fell 2-1 to the Pittsburgh Penguins. A couple of early afternoon games. How are we feeling about a 12 o'clock start against Washington tomorrow? 12 noon and then 2 o'clock on Saturday to finish off this road trip. Flames fans down for the afternoon starts? Now, for us in broadcast and for Steinberg and everybody else, it's a bit of a throws off the schedule a bit because you're used to your days being a little bit more open. But I'm curious from, you know, casual fan, we don't have this weekend off like our friends to the south do for American Thanksgiving. Are you going to find a way to stream the game at work? Will you be listening on the Radio Player Canada app to keep up with it? Or you're just going to take an extra weekend off to make sure you catch the Flames and the Capitals tomorrow. We'll have all the coverage for you, just as we normally do. Flames warm-up with Steinberg at 11, Wills and Labardius on the call at 12, and we'll do the same thing on Saturday with warm-up at 1 and puck drop at 2. So no NHL games on this American Thanksgiving, but we do have a triple header of NFL action today. Bills avoiding a massive upset against the Detroit Lions today in the first game of the triple header. 28-25, the final from Ford Field. Tyler Bass hits a 45-yard field goal to win it. Bills move to 8-3. Lions 4-7. Just getting set to kick off right now. Or a couple minutes in now, I should say. Giants and Cowboys from Dallas, a classic NFC East matchup. Both of these teams 7-3 and trying to chase down the Eagles and secure a playoff spot. We could see a couple of playoff teams out of the NFC East this year. Wouldn't that be surprising? And then I mentioned it with Lou in the first segment. His Vikings are hosting the New England Patriots for a 6:20 kickoff to end off this U.S. Thanksgiving triple header of football. Patriots 6-4, Vikings 8-2, but they're licking their wounds after that beatdown at the hands of Dak Prescott and the Cowboys from yesterday. We're efforting our pal Adnan Virk from MLB and NHL Network for our regular Thursday chat. Lots to chat with Mr. Virk. There's some MLB offseason, hockey's in full swing. He's back on this side of the border visiting his family in Ontario. But I was going to be curious now that he is down in the U.S. on a full-time basis if he's adapted the American Thanksgiving. And I think now that we've got him, we'll go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and I can ask our pal Adnan Virk some of those questions. Virk, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great, Logo. It's great to be back in Canada for American Thanksgiving. I know where you're going with this. I appreciate our proper Thanksgiving. This is the bastardized version of Thanksgiving, what Americans do. And, of course, it was always great being Canadian because it just meant you get to watch a Lions game at 12:30, to watch the, you know, the fourth quarter when you get home from school, at least where I was in Ontario, obviously different for you guys in Alberta. And then you get to watch the Cowboys at 4 and cheer against them. So that, to me, is what this day is. Our Thanksgiving is still the better one.
Have you adopted an American Thanksgiving? Like, if you weren't back at home visiting family in Ontario, would you guys do a Thanksgiving down there?
Yeah, because I'm badly outnumbered. My wife's American, yes. And all four boys are American born. So that's the problem. What happens is that first Monday in October, I will buy myself like a turkey sandwich and tell myself happy Thanksgiving, but nobody else around me is celebrating.
Yeah.
Whereas the entire country is celebrating in November, And like I said, American family, American relatives, et cetera. So, yeah, we generally go to Long Island, which is just a – God, it's a horrible place to go to if you live in New Jersey because you've got to go through New York City. I'm trying to think of a comparison. I don't know Calgary well enough, but think of a place that's like, you know, 30 kilometers, but it takes you 2 hours to get there. That's Long Island compared to New Jersey. And it doesn't matter when you go. There's like only one street to get into Long Island. So it's like – I remember going on Thanksgiving 2 years ago. It took 2 hours to get their logo. I'm like, wait, I thought everyone was off today. Who the hell is driving? I thought everybody was home watching football. 2 hours to get home. It was ridiculous. Yeah, I think I left the house at like 3, got there at 5, and then we were done at 10. Still took an hour and a half to get home. I can't see any good things about Long Island except for maybe the Islanders. That's it.
Yeah, they're not bad. They beat the Oilers last night, so Flames fans around here will be very happy with the Islanders of late. Americans do Thanksgiving pretty differently than Canadians. I know the timing's different, but it sort of culminates in this big weekend for Americans with Black Friday, the football going on all weekend. Have you noticed over the years, like, it's considerably different with your wife and your family there than what you used to do when you were in Canada full time?
I thought I knew everything there was to know about Americans prior to moving to America. Nothing was going to surprise me. And yet the one thing I had no idea what it was when I moved in May of 2010 was what Black Friday was. I had never heard the expression. I didn't know what that meant. And then someone said to me, oh, Black Friday's coming up. And I honestly had to Google. I go, I don't want to sound like an idiot. Let me just look this up. And then someone actually explained it to me in a better fashion. They go, oh, you know what it is? It's like Boxing Day. I go, thank you very much. Now you're putting it into jargon. I understand. It is like our Boxing Day. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that was always a question people had. I go, what the hell is Boxing Day? I go, it's just a day you get great gifts, okay? It's the day after Christmas. You get tons of great gifts. And that's just a great deal. That's what it is. So that is what Black Friday is. But I didn't understand, Logan, the extent to which Black Friday takes over. Like, I think Boxing Day is a pretty good deal in Canada, especially because everyone is watching the World Juniors and generally it's a time to be with friends and family. But Black Friday in America goes to a different level. Like, where I used to live in Connecticut, it was near a Best Buy. And I am telling you, with the hours I worked and you work, we know what it's like in the sports media business. I might be getting home at 2 in the morning. And if it was Thanksgiving night, I'd look over and I'm like, oh, my God, lines forming at 2 in the morning for the 6 a.m. opening of Best Buy in Black Friday. I'm like, wait. That can't be worth it. Like a four hour wait just to get like stereos at half off. I'm like, there's got to be a better way. But people love their Black Friday.
They sure do. I can remember yearly, and I'm sure we'll have videos tomorrow of the stores opening and people fighting for TVs. And I'm with you, and I'm not a Boxing Day guy. I honestly, I prefer, like most people probably do, to just order things off Amazon, and I don't have to interact with any more humans than I usually do. But I mean, like, I can't see it being worth it to get up at 4 a.m. to, you know, wrestle through 10 other people so I can get my hands on a Samsung TV. I don't see the value in it.
I can't wrap my head around it. Yeah, it's investment versus reward. So to your point, the Samsung TV, what does it normally go for? $600. Okay, Black Friday, it's marked down by half. Okay, hey, I get it, man. Every dollar counts. If I could save $300, I'd like to do that too. But to your point, is it worth the investment of waiting 2 or 3 hours? And then literally you're fighting with people, wrestling, jostling. I mean, it's just not worth that effort. I don't get it.
No, I can't do it. I can't. I simply can't put myself through it. And, hey, I'm down for a good, you know, get a little physical. I play a little football. I'm down for, you know, a little pushing and shoving. I get it. But, yeah, right. To me, it's a little bit too far. We'll see how it goes tomorrow. We're here at a local sporting goods shop, Adrenaline Source for Sports here in Calgary. And they've got some killer Black Friday deals that we'll talk about a little bit later on. But I can guarantee you there won't be the maddening lineups for anybody here at 3 a.m. So that's the good news ahead of this one. We're chatting with Ad Nanvirk, MLB Network, NHL Network here, our usual Thursday chat with Adnan. Wanted to start with this. Not a lot going on in baseball in the offseason right now, Adnan, but how does a Steph Curry pitch help the Giants potentially land Aaron Judge in all of this?
Well, I remember my former agent, the great Nick Kahn, who was just a mastermind at CAA, Creative Artists Agency, which is a very important agency in America and, of course, represents a lot of athletes. You know, he told me, he's now the co-CEO there at WWE, but he told me years ago, you know, it can be kind of a tricky business when clients leave agents. And so, you know, Nick might have a conversation with a certain broadcast. He wants to go to him, and then the jilted agent would be upset. And as Nick once explained to me, he goes, you know, it's like we were kids and a guy would have an affair. He'd say, oh, my God, how could you know, that's horrible. But the whole point is the guy doesn't go looking unless he's interested. So I draw that to Aaron Judge in that if indeed he leaves the Yankees, anybody who tries to point this as some sort of betrayal, you know, how can Aaron Judge leave the Yankees? They've been so good to him. you know, it's the first franchise he was with, one rookie of the year with him, et cetera. I'm like, hey, he only goes looking when he's not happy at home, right? Mm-hmm. Much like an unfaithful husband. If he's happy at home and he's being well-fed and taken care of in all the ways you and I know, hey, we're good, man. He's watching Wheel of Fortune. He's going to bed at 10. All good. But if something's annoying him and he starts looking out the window, he sees the neighbor's wife. He's like, hey, you know, what about that? That's how these things happen. And once you start to at least open yourself up to the art of seduction, well, guess what? Things are going to happen because now that girl across the street, they're going to make herself look very attractive to you. So I love the fact San Francisco knows, hey, at the very least, again, it's like fishing. We got a little bite in the water. Okay. I don't know to what level we got, but he's interested. He's meeting us. He's making the effort to show up. Let's go all out. Let's show off the Bay Area. He's from Linden, California, which I was chastised about. I said to MLB Network, it's the Bay Area. Apparently, it is not, but it is Northern California, which we do know. So it's fine. I don't want to offend anybody. I know it's not.
Sounds like the Bay, the GTA thing, the back and forth. People give you crap if you're not quite in that area. Yeah.
100%. So I'm like, fine. He's from Northern California. He is from the area. Perhaps he grew up a fan of these teams. All good. But once you start to use that star power, you see why the Bay Area would be so attractive. We got Steph Curry and the Warriors, man. Like, this is an absolute juggernaut in the NBA. Obviously not having a good season, but they can tell you what success is like in San Francisco. You can make a call to Buster Posey, and he'll tell you how much fun it was 2010, 2012, 2014. You know, you can ask, you know, any fans, ask 49ers fans, ask Jimmy Garoppolo what it's like. Hey, it's been a rough ride, man, but once I got to the Super Bowl, it was pretty cool, pretty special. And now that we're winning right now, the Niners are pretty good in the NFC. Like, that area is a hotbed of sports. And it's one thing they will use, because if you leave New York, you know the Yankees are going to say, hey, there's only one New York, man. Can't beat New York. But the Bay is going to go, hey, bro, come on. You're not a New Yorker. You're from this area. You know what it's like. And you can ask Steph Curry. You can ask Buster Posey. And you can ask these 49ers what it's like to win in this area and how special that is. And, oh, by the way, we'll give you whatever we want. Like, the money, don't worry about the money. We all know the number is starting with a 3. And I think if you start the bidding at 8 years, 330, like, if the Giants go, hey, we'll give you $350. And here's the biggest thing to me, Logan. I think this is absolutely crucial. It's been clear, at least from Judge's camp, that they don't have to go back to the Yankees if they don't want to. Meaning, Brian Cashman, I'm sure, has been in conversation. I'm sure he has given them an offer. Let's just suppose the offer is 8 years, $330, as I mentioned, which I think is a very good number. My friend Jim Bowden, former GM, writes for The Athletic. That's the numbers he said. Like, that sounds pretty good to me. Because if you know, the numbers was 7-13 he turned down. So we're talking over $100 million. Plus an extra year for a 30-year-old outfielder. So let's suppose the Giants go, hey, man, we're going to give you 9 for $360. We're giving you $40 million a year. Judge doesn't have to go back to the Yankees and go, hey, just a heads up, they're offering 9 for $360. Do you want to match? He is under no compulsion to do that. Now, some agents have this relationship, as do the players. They want to just check back with the team because perhaps they will match it and say, you know what? Yeah, if the Yankees want to match it or go higher, let's keep going back and forth. They have made the highest bid win. But if Judge goes, hey, I don't want to do that song and dance, man. They had their chance. They offered 213. I turned them down. I had one of the greatest seasons ever. And now their offer is 8 for 330. And guess what? The Giants is 9 for 360, and it's ballgame. I'm not going back to them. That, to me, is what hurts the Yankees. The longer this process goes on, the more it hurts the Yankees because the bid starts to go up and up, and the Dodgers go, screw it. We'll give them 375. Okay, it's a lot of money, but who cares? We're the Dodgers. We can afford it. And that's my fear for the Yankees. The longer it goes, the more concerned I am if I'm them.
Your colleague from MLB Network had a lot of people buzzing here above north of the border, the U.S. border here, and that follow the Blue Jays. Your pal John Morosi saying, hey, the Blue Jays have reportedly, you know, shown some interest in signing Cody Bellinger. He was non-tendered by the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that's got a lot of people wondering about a potential fit. Do you see one there between the Blue Jays and Bellinger, Adnan?
I do, and Morosi is the best. He's all over all of this stuff. And he had said, hey, watch out for the Mariners and Brandon Nimmo. Nimmo's from Wyoming and therefore could have some interest in going to Seattle. They need an outfielder. And, of course, the Mariners squash that because DePoto gets to Oscar Hernandez, who we all love. I think a terrific trade for both teams, particularly for Seattle, as they get a lot more power in their outfield. But that means they're out of the Nimmo sweepstakes. And the next tweet was, well, hey, the Jays could be in on Nimmo, which I'm not crazy about. Like, I'll go on the record. I heard the numbers could be like 5 years, $100 million. I'm like, wait, what? For Brandon Nimmo, this guy's only played more than 100 games twice in his career. I believe he's turning 30. He's a great on-base guy, no question. Like top five outfielder the last few years in getting on base. But not much power, 16 home runs. Decent defender, like a little bit above average, but nothing special. Good base runner, nothing great. Like you're giving that guy $100 million. Like, whoa. Like we gave Springer 6 years, 150. I get that. That guy's a stud. He does a lot of great things. Although right away you can see, George Springer is probably not going to be a center fielder by the end of this contract. Already those injuries have impacted him. and they'd like to see him DH a little bit, get somebody else in there. So I got a great pause when I saw, wow, Jay's in a Nimmo, but I get it. Now, the Bellinger, to me, I go, that makes more sense because everyone knows that Jays need a left-handed bat. They're way too right-handed dependent. So you bring in Bellinger, who right now, star has fallen, right? Former MVP, but he has not been the guy he was in the past. The Dodgers are willing to say goodbye. You get him on a low contract, low years, low money, bet on himself, and he puts up big numbers, he'll get paid. So I am much more a fan of the Bellinger-type move, a guy who obviously has power, who you know that power will play at Rogers Center, doesn't hit for average like most major leaguers these days, but maybe a change of scenery can help to rejuvenate him, like Joey Gallo leaving from the Yankees, going to the Dodgers. Who's to say Bellinger wouldn't benefit from a pitcher's park in L.A. to a hitter's park in Toronto? And he gives you that lefty bat at a much, much more affordable price than Brandon Nimmo.
Worked out pretty well for the Jays, so they took a shot on Marcus Semien for a year. That's kind of where I was thinking between the comparisons.
That's a great comp. Semien, another guy, was looking around going, hey, I'm not really getting the years and the dollars I want. I'll just get 1 year at good money, and the guy has the most home runs ever by a second baseman, and then parlays that into a big deal to the Rangers. Absolutely. Bellinger's probably thinking the same thing. Give me 1 year, $10 million. I'm going to go out and put monster numbers, and then I'll get that nine-figure contract again.
Yeah, if I'm Ross Atkins and company, that's exactly what I'm showing Cody Bellinger. Last time you took a short-term deal with somebody, it worked out pretty well here, and we got an even better roster now than we did when he came in. So we'll see if that comes to fruition for the Jays or not. I'll talk to you about something that we haven't talked a lot about, Adnan, because let's be honest, we've got baseball, we've got NHL, we've got, you know, different sporting, we talk football with you all the time, but we've never really had a big enough soccer event worth diving into between the two of us here. And I saw on Twitter, you had your Tim Hortons ready to go. I was so proud of you. You were ready. You were like everybody up here. I've never seen in my life. Now, last time Canada was in a World Cup, all truth be known, I wasn't born. I haven't had that sort of special relationship with soccer that others have had in this country, but I'm starting to feel the buzz for this. Where it was obviously a great game from Canada. It's too bad they didn't come out with the win. But from a bigger picture perspective, as a fellow Canadian, Ed, and I'm curious where soccer's been on the sporting radar for you and where Canada in a World Cup kind of measures out on your viewing, you know, chart. Is that something you're going to be really keying on and watching every time they're on the World Cup pitch?
Well, it's funny. I'd love to say, just as a patriotic Canadian, I said, I've got to be back on Canadian soil if we ever return to the World Cup. And after 36 years, I've now been vindicated by that. But of course, as you know, it was just U.S. Thanksgiving. I had a few days off. Like, I happen to be here coincidentally. But you catch the buzz and you catch the fever. And I just had lunch with a couple of my old college roommates. We've been buddies for 26 years. And I was talking to my buddy John, and I said, I know his son is a rabid soccer fan. He's 7 or 8 years old. And I said, God, he must have been going nuts. He goes, well, I was going to take him out of school to watch the game, but they showed it at the school. And I said, wow, that's the stories we heard about. You know, like, I don't think they did that for the Summit Series in 72, but that was pretty shocking to me. To be like, wow, this is a big deal. When they're actually saying, hey, kids, I know it's only grade two, but still, hey, we're not teaching anything. We're all going to watch the soccer match. Normally he wears a uniform. Go ahead, wear your Alphonso Davies jersey. I said, that's pretty cool. That's pretty monumental. So I thought to me that was pretty telling that kids are allowed to not skip school, but we'll bring the TV to you and you can watch the game together and after the first half, run home and watch the rest. My dad is not a sports fan, Logan. He's a great guy. I love him to death. He's not a sports guy. We're not going to sit and watch the World Series together. We're not going to chat about the Raptors, but he loves the World Cup. He likes his soccer and he loves the World Cup. So my dad has been locked in on the recliner watching all the matches. It's unbelievable. I'm like, Dad, I've never seen this Saudi, and he just loves the World Cup. So it was, for me, in a personal level, a nice bonding moment. Me, my mom, my dad, my kids are watching it together. And, of course, it's just great to see Canada play. Now the bad news, we lose. And, again, as a non-soccer aficionado, I just go by what they're telling me, what the numbers say. And my buddy Christian Jack, formerly the Score, as soon as he tweeted out, hey, teams that lose the first game, only 11% of the time, they go on to the second round. I go, oh, my God, this is catastrophic. How do we lose this? But a closer look reveals the fact Canada should have won the game, right? We had more chances in the first half. And Belgium, I was stunned by this logo. Ranked like number second in the world. I'm like, wow. Like, I knew they were good. If you would ask me, I would have said, I don't know, 18th, 22nd. Like, no, they're number two. I'm like, wow.
So the fact good.
Right, we only lost 1-0 against the second best country in the world. I'm like, okay, so now you've got my attention. Croatia, Sunday, 9 o'clock local, 11 a.m. Eastern. I'm like, I'll be watching that match and thinking, hey, you know what? We can beat Croatia, and I think we can beat Morocco. And at the very least, this is what I looked at. Because someone whispered this to me. I go, that can't be true. And then I Googled it. It is true. In 86, Canada not only did not win a match, but didn't even score a goal.
Nope.
So the drought right now continues after a 1-0 loss. I'm like, let's just score a goal against Croatia, and I'll be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm sitting there yesterday watching the game. I was working the mornings earlier, so I got to watch the game yesterday in its entirety, and I'm sitting there. I don't know. I'm still picking up on guys. I'm still trying to figure everything out. And here I am after Davies misses the kick. I'm sitting there arguing guys on Twitter. It should have been David. It should have been Jonathan David. How could you have gone with anybody else? Like I have a clue what's going on. All of a sudden, I'm the most invested person in this, going through, questioning what John Herdman should have done. Like, I have a clue as to what this is supposed to be. It's funny. We've had a couple people text in, our guy Leon from the station, and a guy on the text line text in and said, yeah, I still remember the Summit series being on TV. First grade there elementary, we watched it in the gym in black and white. And said, look, I was 59 years old now, and I still remember that day like it was yesterday. I remember when I was in high school, Virk, and the Olympics were in Vancouver, the TVs we had in school were set for the Vancouver Olympics back then. But I've never had anything like this come close for soccer that's felt like this magnitude.
Yeah, never for soccer. I'll be able to keep texting in. What's the time they brought a sporting event at school? Because I'm hard-pressed to think of a lot of them because most of the time they're at night. Like, you know, Game 6 of the 93 World Series, Joe Carter's home run, we were all at home. You have to think of events, like you said, Olympics, World Cups, different times, but a momentous event that you'd actually stop school to watch it. That's pretty cool to know that the Summit Series was that big a deal in 72 because it's only grown in stature over time.
Yeah, that's great. Football game, what interests you? I can't believe that we're actually talking about the Giants and the Cowboys at 7-3 somehow, and that are we going to have three teams out of the NFC East that make the playoffs this year, Virk? I'm stunned at this, as how this continues to work out this way.
Yeah, you know the one that I care about is the Eagles. The other two I couldn't care less about. So when I saw the schedule, I got 4 o'clock Cowboys Giants. Okay, I'll make sure to make plans and see my family and cousins then because I couldn't care less. I hate both these teams. I hope they both suffer catastrophic injuries and it ends in a tie. That way I'll be thrilled. Like, at least with the Cowboys and Vikings a week ago, I said, okay, I actually want the Cowboys to win because I want some breathing distance for Philly to get that number one seed. So I was thrilled. Cowboys won. Okay, cool. But I look at the schedule and I go, they're both 7-3. I mean, I hate them both equally. So I don't know what to expect. I'm with you. I can't believe the other day the Cowboys, someone said, like, Dak Prescott's the weak spot. I'm like, wow. So, like, their team is that good that he's actually the problem? The rest of the team is loaded? And the Giants, I said to myself, there's no way Daniel Jones is having a great season. I better look at these stats. And I looked, and sure enough, all he's done is he hasn't turned the ball over. Now, he's, of course, made a couple of good plays here and there, but I looked at him like, so basically, the Giants are playing well because they've got good defense, and the quarterback doesn't turn it over. And similarly for the Cowboys, they're not letting Dak make the same mistakes. It just goes back to show you, in football, if you've got defense, special teams, you don't turn the ball over, you can be in the mix. Like, for God's sakes, the Jets are over 500, and Zach Wilson's an atrocity and just got benched, and yet they're in the hunt for a playoff spot. So I'm with you that I'm mystified that we're 10 games into the season and both those teams are still looking good for a playoff spot. But I've got to think at some point things change. Maybe they don't. Like, this is just a year where the Rams and the Bucks and the Packers have all been disappointing. Tampa Bay, you still feel like they'll turn it around. They can win their division. But like, the Rams and Packers, it didn't happen. Aaron Rodgers is a broken thumb.
Done.
Rams have been a dud. Stafford's not coming back. So, yeah, that opens up some playoff spots. And you start to say to yourself, Eagles, Vikings, Giants, Cowboys, Bucks, 49ers. Kind of feels like those six right now.
Virk, you're the best. Always appreciate it, man. Enjoy some time at home with your family. Get home safe, and we'll chat with you again next week, hey?
I appreciate it, Logan. Let me tell you what, that Tim Hortons chili and the French vanilla went down smooth. Nothing beats it.
Good to hear, pal. Take care, hey?
Take care, buddy.
Adnan Virk, our MLB NHL Network insider, also hosted the Cinephile podcast. You can find him on Twitter, @AdnanSVirk.